Thanks, Rob. It's Download here, 720 WGN. It's time to reload this week's news. Biggest stories, winners, losers, overreported, underreported. Which story took you down the rabbit hole, and which story will be remembered from this week, 5, 10, 15, 50,000 years from now? We're gonna attempt to answer that question along with your help, 312-981-7200. In studio tonight, AD Quid. She's a reporter at the Daily Line. We love the Daily Line here. She also does a podcast, Aldercast, which you can hear at WGN Plus. AD, good to see you.
Thanks for having me.
All right, and Craig Newman back. Of course, the former editor, managing editor over at Sun-Times. Did some Cranes, freelance editor now, and a regular here on the Down. I could say that now, right?
Three times as a regular.
Three, yes. All right. Craig, good to see you, buddy.
Good to see you.
All right. So let's get to it. I mean, I kind of mentioned at the top of the hour that it's kind of fun to have a reload segment when we really, there are a lot of big stories and not necessarily what's the biggest.
Right.
Like we've done some stuff. Craig, you've been on a couple of times where it's like it's a no-brainer what the big story is. This week, it's varied. But why don't we start with you, AD? What do you got for your biggest story of the week?
My biggest story is kind of an encompassment of all the other big stories going on. So it's Donald Trump's Twitter getting shut down for 11 whole minutes.
It's a good start.
Well, the best 11 minutes of our week.
Well, it was as all this other stuff was going on. So we had Bo Bergdahl. We had this huge climate report, Trump's visit to Asia, Obamacare open enrollment, tax reform. And we had no idea how long this account was going to be down. But it's his megaphone. And what does he do without his megaphone?
I have to say, did that happen on Halloween? Or when was that? That was like the day before?
Yesterday.
I got to say, it does. I mean, it really does. It's a problem with this week. But a story that happened, and I actually, and I, it might be because I have taken a stronger stance that I'm not that in. I kind of go out of the way to avoid Trump Twitter. You know, the way that I know that how he's using it, and I'd rather get to the issues as opposed to that. And it wasn't until I started seeing Twitter actually respond and how they responded, saying it was an employee,
right,
that I realized what a big issue this was, because this has to do with
security.
I mean, we are so worried about hacking and security and what could happen if someone got their hands on such an influential Twitter account. It's a really big deal.
Absolutely. And, you know, the whole discussion, especially with the social media platforms being before Congress this week, it plays into that. It plays into the fake news cycle. It plays into the what can you believe and what can you not believe. On the face of it, it seems ridiculous and or a blessing that we don't have Trump to tweet
11
minutes in our life. And, you know, I think I'm old enough as the rest of us to remember when there was a big discussion about whether Trump Twitter is even news because we hadn't decided that those were basically his press release platforms,
right,
at the time. But, yeah, you know, I wanted to laugh it off, but then you see a disgruntled employee is shutting down the president of the United States information dissemination platform, and it does become a concern.
Well, and he could have tweeted from the account, this person, and used Trump's words and said, let's go nuke North Korea.
Right.
Which, would we notice the difference?
Right.
That's disturbing.
Yeah.
It's disturbing. And, you know, for whatever political reasons or disgruntled reasons that this Twitter employee did it, the idea that it reminds you that the president is using a public platform that we all use. He has a login and a password just like us. And people behind that platform have access to our, not just his, but our accounts if they want to get into them. It's kind of mind-boggling when the more you kind of unpeel or peel back, the more you realize what a big story this is.
Well, you know, back when I was still teaching, I used to tell my students, if you're using a free platform and you don't know what the product is, you're the product, right? And the president can't escape that either. So it's not your platform to own, and it's not really your content to own,
and it's not really secure,
and it's not secure, yeah. And he's using an insecure phone.
All right. Yeah.
That's a whole other discussion.
So, you know what? I saw that on the list because I had kind of had it in overreported because after that came out with Twitter, it was just retweeted to death. But you're absolutely right. I mean, it does rise to the level of biggest story of the week. All right, Craig, what do you got for biggest story of this week?
Well, I looked way, way back into Monday morning when we were all shaky and waiting for Robert Mueller to come out with his promised indictments. And you know, here it is on Friday, and it seems like that story is almost semi-forgotten. You've got Paul Manafort, the former campaign chairman, struggling to find bail or bond money. You've got his business partner who's been thrown in. You've got this mystery guy, Papadopoulos, who was a – well, I'm wearing a DePaul sweater, but he is a DePaul graduate from right here in Chicago. Yeah. You know, this is the drip, drip, drip of an investigation that lots of people had claimed is fake news or drumming up nonsense is starting to seem a little bit more real, or a lot more real.
Well, it's also added extra from the president on Twitter as he has opened up the war once again with Democrats and Hillary Clinton to distract. I don't want to use that word necessarily, but just to point out that there are also inconsistencies with their stories in Russia. But it is interesting that, this is what some say may be the first shoe to drop. And others who say that this is just a witch hunt, and even conservatives in Congress today saying they put a non-binding resolution saying they wanted Mueller to resign.
Which is shocking because he was originally appointed under the Bush administration. He's a Republican, like a card-carrying Republican, a Vietnam War vet, a distinguished member of the law enforcement community, including running the FBI through a couple of presidential terms, including into the Obama administration.
Well, they said they wanted a conflict of interest because he was buddies with Comey.
Yeah, which is stunning. Yeah. I this seems like the most unimpeachable person you can find, not just in D.C., but probably in most corners of the country. And, to his credit, it doesn't seem like he cares. To his equal credit, there have been no leaks out of his investigation.
Right.
That seems to me to discredit the idea that there's some sort of witch hunt going on.
Well, I can't believe that he was able to keep this under wraps for a full month. I mean, Papadopoulos, pled guilty at the beginning of October, and it just came out this week, and none of us knew.
And was arrested in July.
Right.
In a public airport.
Yeah.
It's pretty impressive to think about an investigation and a law enforcement endeavor of that scope that's just been silent. And the Papadopoulos thing, I think, is kind of a stunning development. I think there's going to be a lot more of these unheard of people that float up from the bottom.
I read a great story today, and I can't remember who where it was because that's how Twitter works these days. But the idea that Trump just last week was talking about how he has the best memory in the world. Or how do you say it? The best memory of all time. Greatest memory. And they asked him today about the meeting with Papadopoulos. He's like, I don't recall. I thought you had the best.
Oh, where everyone was sitting at the conference table.
Yeah.
He's right there.
It was unimportant. It doesn't matter. I couldn't tell you what was said in that meeting. I thought you had the best memory of all time. I just thought it's kind of a good point. Okay. There's a couple other stories, and we'll get to all this stuff tonight. But the other stories that I had on the list, I mean, it's amazing to think about. DNA Info, we'll talk about that. Closing up shop abruptly, not only in New York, but here in Chicago as well as Chicagoans. The terrorist attack in New York City is another one that interesting once again about. I mean, I thought it was interesting. We can talk about the foreign policy approach for President Trump with the attacks today in Somalia and the airstrikes. And what he said, which he's like, if you hit us, we'll hit you harder. I mean, he's really taking a stance, and it begs the question about whether or not, even though ISIS took responsibility for that, and we all know that there's no proof for them to do that, they just do that because they want to spread their message. The question being that idea of if you strike, we strike harder, does that work? And then the other that we haven't talked about, and we'll talk about tonight, is tax reform. A huge, the first time since what, the late 80s, mid to late 80s,
the Reagan
administration, that we are seeing a change in the tax code, and we will talk about that tonight as well. Craig Newman, A.D. Quigg in studio. We will take a break, and we'll get started with our winners and losers coming up here. So we reload the news, 312-981-7200. Stay with us. It's a download here, 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. We're reloading this week's news, 312-981-7200, 630, talking about the Trump Twitter. It's so interesting. Did he lose his mind, the president, and tell someone to fix it? Did Twitter get a call from the White House? It's very interesting to see it would be a good quick documentary about a thriller, if you will, about the 11 minutes of the president.
Well, on the way here, I was listening to NPR, and they were talking about this was actually a contractor from halfway around the world.
Yeah.
And that there are a lot of contractors with authentication privileges that can take people on and off.
Oh, that's got to be such a pain in the butt for Twitter right now.
Yeah. Meanwhile, it took me 6 months to get an account unlocked because I forgot my password. So there are levels.
There are levels. 312-981-7200. We're about to transition to the winners and losers. Craig Newman, 80 Quig in studio tonight. All right, so let's get to winners and losers. I think it's interesting because the story continues to evolve. But why don't we start with the revelations that came out of Donna Brazile's upcoming book about politics and essentially calling out that Hillary Clinton and her camp had control of the DNC and essentially colluded, if you will, to keep Bernie Sanders out. I had in my winner category Bernie Sanders because, truthfully, you know, for a guy who lost a primary, you couldn't be a bigger winner right now in the way that someone took it from. This is exactly what Hillary Clinton wants from Donald Trump, this idea that it was stolen, this handed to. But, Craig, you say even the revelations today have changed. The story continues to change and develop.
Well, because nothing is cut and dried anymore, right? So, right. Yeah, I guess the reporting now is that Hillary's camp was given some sort of authority, or they had worked out a deal to have some sort of authority into the general election, not during the primary season. But, you know, there are a lot of questions to be answered about timing, when was what was discussed. You know, obviously there was the whole scandal about Donna Brazile giving maybe one question to the Hillary camp, right, during one of the debates. You know, I think there's a lot of things that happen, especially in a major presidential campaign, with the political parties and the power structures therein, probably on both sides. And, you know, did this exceed the usual hardball being played or not? I don't know that there's an answer to that yet.
You know, and I would say, Adi, what I find to be intriguing is that this is all history in the way that this candidate and this party lost an election. It's like if we were continuing
history,
to...
stop reliving.
We can't stop. And the idea that if it was the number one story in the media that Mitt Romney, and it kept going back to Mitt Romney after he lost to Barack, right, Obama, but it just wasn't that way. What do you think it is? Is it pushback that people are pushing back at this movement that people think that the Trump presidency is illegitimate and that this is kind of a way to push back at that?
I think part of it is Trump himself pushing this over and over and over again on Twitter, and he's got a horde of people who are pushing interest in that as well. Right. And people don't feel like it was resolved. I mean, people are still so torn about this presidency. No one has really been able to move on. So I think the fascination with what happened during the campaign continues, as well as the Russia investigation.
And we are fundamentally now a squabbling nation. Whether it's about this or race or what taxes or whatever, you know,
guns.
We're just at each other about everything. And this is, and in part of it's the Clintons. You know, they cannot have a positive image in the media, and a large portion of that is on them. But they won't go away. So, you know, they get things lumped on.
I was thinking about this the other day that, I mean, even, and maybe it's revisionist history on my end, but I feel like even the Bush-Gore election of 2000, at a certain point, you got to 2001, and 9/11 had a lot to do with that, moving on. But even this just seems more. It seems like every day there's some sort of investigation or bombshell or developing story about an election that is a year old now.
There's at least two congressional investigations underway around the Clinton campaign, and that's the losing candidate. You know, it's not going to end because no side will allow it to end. And I don't know if that's because the right needs an enemy or the left is fighting with itself over who the legitimate candidate is. But, you know, it just keeps sitting there spinning.
And Trump keeps calling Elizabeth Warren Pocahontas, which just drives me crazy. It drives me crazy. It drives me crazy because I'm like,
unnecessary.
This, it's just decorum. Like, I don't know. Like, respect. This is a senator.
Yeah.
I don't understand. I don't understand how he has a little pet nickname.
Racist one.
It's
a vehemently racist one.
It took me a second. I was talking with Pete before. I'm like, what is the origin of that again? Like, and he reminded me that she claims that she has Native American ancestry, which I'm like, even worse. Like, now it's gross that he's like, he's making fun of what she claims her ancestry is. That's not acceptable in the United States.
It's just not needed. I think he can make points and you know, be tough about his questioning of various motives without, you know, stooping to third grade nonsense. Yeah. Or maybe he can't. I don't know.
You got on the winners. We talked about a little bit in the biggest story of the week, but you have your AD. You have Robert Mueller.
I picked Robert Mueller,
who continues to be a winner. Even as people around, I mean, there's more and more stories that swirl around that will the president replace him? Is he compromised? A conflict of interest? But
right.
But he's doing his job.
What I said before was it's incredible that he managed to keep this secret in like the age of leaks and Twitter and the FBI and CIA in the states that they are and low morale and all that stuff. But efforts to discredit him have fallen flat so far. So there's a Washington Post poll. 58% majority say they approve of Mueller's handling of the investigation. 28% say they disapprove. At the same time, 49% think it is likely Trump himself committed a crime in connection with possible Russian attempts to influence the election.
That's and I'm sitting in this chair, and I was just arguing with somebody on text about it. You know, this the idea that anyone would. The idea that Russian, we've seen this with the social media platforms being a Congress and even, but the idea that Russia would influence our election in some way or another, everyone should be appalled by that.
Yes.
Regardless of
well, everyone what, should accept it.
Yeah, everyone should accept it. Right. There you go. Perfect way to say that. Accept it. Any political candidate that accepts that and says, you know what, this interference can help me, or let's work together because this can help me get elected. That's unacceptable.
Or doesn't understand that it's detrimental not just to both parties, but to our core strength as a nation, which is a free and flowing democracy.
Right. And I guess the question, I think, for Democrats and for people on the left is if your candidate was in the same position and the right was appointing special prosecution and they wanted to know, and all this, I think you would have to recognize at some point that regardless of party affiliation, there's American affiliation, and the idea of colluding with a foreign adversary to essentially win a power seat is unacceptable.
Well, and how it's fundamentally undermined our system. And
right.
that was their goal, to undermine our trust in news and the way that we receive information, and they succeeded.
Well, and I think you've seen the way they've used the platforms is to pit us against each other. And to a large extent, they've succeeded. You know, they've undermined our ways and means of living.
Right.
Excuse
right.
me.
Yeah. All right, Craig. Let's go to yours, which I think is great because it's. I think it can fit in so many different categories. You have in the winner category. I would put it in the underreported category, but Chicago violence, which shows up in the Reload every single week in some category or another, rarely does it show up in the winner category. But the numbers are trending in a positive direction.
Yeah, and you know we were kind of chatting during the break. We don't quite know what the reasoning behind it is, but certainly, you know, just a couple of quick numbers that shot and killed is down about 7% year over year. Shot and wounded is down about almost 16% year over year. Total shot down about 14%, and total homicides is down about 11%, I want to say. So, you know, we still see too much violence. We still
Absolutely,
have almost
yeah.
600 people killed in the city of Chicago this year. You know, is this a sign for hopefulness? I don't think we have enough data to really.
And it's also an anomaly. I mean, because you're playing off of 2016, which was supposed to be an anomaly year. And it was supposed to be. We remember that about this time last year, we're like, whoa, these numbers are way out of whack from where it was 2 years before that and 2 years before that. And then this year didn't correct itself for the first 6 to 8 months. To see correction now is good. It's always good to have less violence, but it might be that 2016 was just, in fact,
right.
an anomaly.
It
or we could
be
in an anomaly month.
Right.
It could be short term. And we don't know what's driving it either. We don't know if it's sometimes it's weather. Sometimes it's sporting events. It's
yeah.
We really don't know.
Yeah, the CPD is saying that they're having more success spotting essentially pre-crime. They're figuring out better how to look at where crimes are going to happen, look at who's committing these crimes, and being able to act before these events happen. You know, I think time's going to tell whether or not that's actually the case. But.
That's such a great point. Time will tell because all of the practices for Chicago Police Department are in a position where it needs time to where you can't judge month to month or day to day, especially. I mean, think of Superintendent Johnson. Was he in year and a half maybe at this point? I mean, it's interesting to see that if there is a trend and the trend continues, then it could be from some of the practices that have been put into place by the police over the last 6 to 8 months.
Right.
It will be interesting to revisit his tenure a couple of years in, because he was basically a street cop. He's well respected by the rank and file. There's all the stories that were done when he came in that he wasn't a Jody Weiss, he wasn't an outsider. Right. Is that paying off? You know, what's the morale situation within the CPD?
Yeah.
There's all these questions about overtime and budgetary issues, I know. And of course you have the DOJ thing kind of sitting in the ether. But, you know, it feels like maybe there's a little bit of movement that could just be momentary.
And they continue making some really interesting investments in technology in a lot of high crime districts. So 7th District, 11th District, they're using a technology called ShotSpotter, which can locate gunshots so people can respond quicker. They have these strategic command centers, like you said. They've made big investments in technology to try to get ahead of stuff.
Well, I have to say it's a first. It's a first to have Chicago violence in the winner category. I'll tell you that, Greg.
Yeah. Enjoy it while it lasts.
Yeah, right. Craig Newman, 80 Quig in studio tonight. We're reloading the news. 312-981-7200. We'll get to your text as well. Coming back, we'll do the losers. That's a popular category. Lots of people in the loser category this week, every week here on The Download. So stay with us. Thanks, Rob. Download here, 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. All right, 312-981-7200. Let's see here. 224 says, consider that Russia's goal is to not meddle with our elections, but to make the United States go after each other and become divisive. Please discuss that versus the political issue discussed when it comes to divisiveness. That's something to be said, Craig, about the idea that maybe it's not as political left and right. Maybe it's just they know that that's the division in this country. And they know they're just going to mess with us.
I think that's the direction we've taken it in. But there's been plenty of reporting that does indicate that they didn't really care. That certainly Vladimir Putin does not like Hillary Clinton. And that's fairly widely known. But you look at how social media was used, and they were jumping in on both sides of a lot of different things. I think the push almost certainly seems to be to have us become a much more divided nation, because that strengthens Russia's place in the world.
Right.
Until we figure out, you know, where our collective head is at.
It's been a pretty divided country, though. I mean, I watching Ken Burns' documentary in Vietnam, I was like, oh, this.
We have memes now, though.
Yeah.
Now we have memes.
Yeah, we have memes now, right. Yeah. I mean, it is interesting. I think that, and I wonder as well, because someone just, 630 just said, you know what, today's the first time in history that someone in the Democratic Party turned on Hillary and told the truth, and your program is only talking Trump. And I guess the question is, and when you say about
he
is the president, of course, and he's got his hands in a lot of other things besides a book tour that Hillary Clinton has her hands in. And what I think that people sometimes conflate is this idea that all Democrats love Hillary Clinton. And I'm not sure that the Democratic Party and the voters, I mean, we saw that with the Bernie Sanders stuff. I mean, there's a divided party as well, and that's why they're out of power. And the way that there is a left that Bernie Sanders really kind of activated. And then there's a standard Democrat, Barry, that didn't have enough power to beat Donald Trump. So there is something to be said about, yes, it is an interesting move that Donna Brazile turned on Hillary Clinton, but that doesn't surprise anybody who might be coming from the left that's happening.
Also, right. Also, Donna Brazile has a little bit of a public image problem. You know, then what do you do now? You write a book, you go out on a tour. I think there's some question, not necessarily about the veracity of what Donna Brazile wrote in her book. Is it Brazile or Brazil? I never really know. But there certainly has to be a lot of question about motivation, that I don't think we've answered yet.
The other thing it revealed was the state of the DNC and how it has not been in good shape. It wasn't in good shape 8 years ago. It's not in any better shape now. And we're seeing state by state, a lot of state houses have turned from red to blue.
Yeah.
And their funds are extremely low. And it kind of showed how behind the scenes there hasn't been as much leadership as there could have been.
Yeah, and you know, I always remind people that in 2008, the Democratic, the DNC went for Hillary. They wanted Hillary Clinton to win that. It was hers to win, and Barack Obama came out of nowhere and maybe captured a little bit more of that Democrat, that left Democrat vote before Bernie Sanders did, meaning they almost, if you remember, right before the actual convention, Hillary Clinton was doing math problems.
Yeah.
She was trying to figure out how she was going to win, and even though all the votes were going Barack Obama's way. This is not new for Democrats. They've always been in a position where they're trying to mess with who's going to be the nominee and who's not.
Well, it's not new for the Clintons, who have been the power base for the party for a number of years, but it's been a tenuous hold on that power.
Right.
They're good at fundraising. They're good at controlling the machine structure of the party, but they're not necessarily good at measuring the zeitgeist of what the potential Democratic voter is. You know, I think what we saw with Bernie Sanders, Hillary Clinton rift is, first of all, you have a person come in who's not even a declared Democrat. He's grabbing a bunch of people who are dissatisfied with just the electoral process in general, and a lot of young people and people who really need some hope to look forward to growing out of their 20s and out of their 30s and finding a way economically in a country that's not really supporting them right now.
Yeah.
So he's got a natural constituency there. The idea that he can tear the party apart that easily is not so much about the weaknesses of Hillary Clinton. It's about the weaknesses of a party that doesn't really maybe have an identity like it thought it did.
Yeah, that's well said. I wonder, too, with the midterms that are coming up, and you hear from Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer who are saying, don't talk impeachment. They sent that message. I think I saw that this week, that they said to their party faithful and to the people in Congress, don't spread. That's not what we're talking about. We want to send the marketing of the Democratic Party as we are strong and we can lead. And, you know, I don't know if that resonates, you know, after watching what's happened, even as this infighting and the president himself able to stoke the flames because they're giving him the opportunity to do that with Donna Brazile and Hillary Clinton. But they're going to keep there is incentive for the president to keep that in the focus or in the focal point, because the truth is that's the dysfunction of the Democrats.
It shouldn't be forgotten, though, that the Republican Party is in no better shape. You know, they control all facets of the national governing structure and can't get things done. They're at war with each other about what they stand for. They're at war with each other about their faith in the president. You know, we have two parties that are weakened across the board. The news cycles tend to vacillate back and forth about which one's in worse shape. Today it's Hillary and Donna Brazile's book. And, you know, tomorrow it'll be back to Trump because he'll be tweeting in the morning.
Yeah.
I wonder if the DNC is going to do what the RNC did after Mitt Romney lost and put together a post-mortem and talk about...
And ignore it.
And promptly throw it in the trash. But if they will try to figure out what their message actually is besides we are strong and we can do this together.
Yeah, I mean, midterms 2018, right around the corner here, and then you start thinking about, and I hate to even say this, but you start thinking about 2020, and that's just the way it works now.
Right now. Now we're the loser.
No, losers, us. We're talking about it. 312-981-7200. All right, let's get to some of the other losers this week. Let's go down to Springfield, because this has been an issue when you talk about in the last couple weeks, we saw what they're calling the Weinstein effect and sexual harassment in Hollywood, in media, and now in state politics, not just state, national politics as well. But more people coming out and you know, for the first time, Senator Ira Silverstein from Rogers Park was docked his leadership. He didn't resign, but he just resigned a leadership post for allegations of harassment with a lobbyist. And what it really revealed, which is really the head scratcher, is there is no inspector general in Springfield. There is no HR department.
Yeah.
And there could be. They just haven't filled it.
Yeah. Our Springfield editor, Ray Hodge, broke that story that there has not been an executive at the IG's office since June of 2013. And
what?
So
what year is this?
We're in 2017.
That's been a little while.
So at least 27 people have made complaints, but the quote that she got, there have been no reports of ethics violations during that period of time, so it's not like there's something that hasn't been done.
How can you report something to nobody?
She was, yeah, exactly. So it's a semantics issue where they said, oh, well, there haven't been complaints, but it's just there hasn't been anyone to complain to.
It's startling, too, because, and I feel like we're all kind of asleep at the wheel, too, as reporters and journalists, in the way that Springfield, of all places, in the way that we have seen a budget showdown and everything about that's happened in the last 4 years, you would think that there was an inspector general making sure everyone was on the up and up, regardless of just harassment issues, which is really where this came up. But the idea that there isn't an executive in that office and there hasn't been really in Rauner's term It's incredible.
Ethics overall. I mean, we don't know what campaign finance, we don't know lobbying violations. There's just a lot of stuff that could have been happening but wasn't.
And the thing again, Craig, and this is what drives me crazy, is the idea that the appointment is from the legislative leaders, meaning it's Mike Madigan and John Cullerton. They're in charge of making sure that that office is staffed. We've seen this in Chicago. AD, you cover this. I mean, we've seen it over and over where the alderman will vote to say, we don't need an IG. we don't need an inspector. You know, they just get in the way. You know, and the idea that the actual legislative body is in charge of hiring their investigator is ludicrous. It's ludicrous. At the end of the day, it's like the one area of broken government where we're like, oh yeah, I guess Madigan's got the, well, I guess he's got a clean legislative agenda at his core.
We do have a pretty strong history of being of high ethical standard in the city of Chicago, yeah, and the state of Illinois. Right. So why worry about it?
I mean, but it comes to light, and because of it, it looks like this weekend they're talking about that they're going to find some, there's a watchdog that might be hired. I mean, obviously, getting back to the core reason where this came from, which was about harassment. It was about sexual harassment and run amok in Springfield from some of these stories. Do you feel like a watchdog and an HR department is the fix for this?
I don't know if we have already seen that the naming of names has been very limited. And I think it's because people are terrified about what will happen to their careers as a result, which is a cultural problem that will take a very long time to fix.
I mean, think about the stunning nature by which this came out.
Right.
You know, during testimony, essentially. And during the testimony, he was outed as a person who had potentially harassed somebody or acted inappropriately. No. Do I think an HR department or an IG will help in Springfield? I mean, we'd have to see how the office is going to be structured going forward, how it's going to be funded. You know, that's been a big problem here in the city. I don't know.
But if, you know, and this goes to just the idea that if this is now, this culture is at least, light is shown on it, and you get to a certain point where some people in power in Springfield recognize that that behavior is going to get them in trouble, does that force the culture to change? Is that a win for the culture to say, you know, now maybe I'm not going to say that lewd thing that I used to say because, well, I guess it's wrong? Like that kind of thing?
Time will tell. I am not optimistic.
Yeah.
I have a limited sense of optimism around this, and we talked about this being on my winners list, that it's a conversation now, and it's a frank conversation. So there's a lot of ugliness about how people are treating not just women, but everybody in professional interaction.
Yeah, it's a power dynamics thing.
So, you know, the fact that this is a conversation and people are starting to feel empowered enough to be public about their concerns or their accusations, I think, is encouraging. How we move forward is, you know, kind of a question mark.
Yeah.
But this is more than we've done, certainly, for some time.
312-981-7200. Let's do this. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll start the overreported, underreported. We're reloading this week's news with AD Quigg from the Daily Line and Craig Newman, a former editor, managing editor over at the Chicago Sun-Times and Cranes, freelancer now. 312-981-7200. We're reloading the news. Stay with us. It's Down Low here, 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman, AD Quigg, and Craig Newman in studio. We're reloading this week's news, 312-981-7200. We're still in the loser category. Coming up, overreported, underreported. Which stories took us down the rabbit hole and which story is going to be remembered from this week, years to come. But let's stay in the losers category. Of course, the Chicago News Consumer you've got, Craig, and this is our segment about DNA Info and Chicagoist. DNA Info, owned by billionaire Joe Ricketts, yesterday abruptly, shockingly, closes up shop. DNA Info, the site's gone, everything's gone. It also owns Gothamist, which owns Chicagoist here in town. 115-plus journalists out of work. Their severance package, of course, but the idea that this is a huge loss for neighborhood reporting and a site that seemed to be gaining traction.
Yeah, it really was. I think you know, the question since DNA launched, and maybe to a lesser extent Chicagoist, has always been how are they going to make money? And part of the problem we've seen is when you've got a billionaire backer or a news conglomerate of some sort, and granted that was a smaller one, that you've got that open-ended question at the end of the cycle. Are they going to continue to back it? You know, there's some question about whether or not he did this because of the unionization vote in the New York DNA office. Whether or not he has other motivations, it can't be because the money was hurting him. He barely noticed it. But at the end of the day, we end up with less journalism in the city, and we end up with a lot of talented journalists who are out of work. Seamus Toomey, the editor over there, I worked with at the Sun-Times, have the highest amount of respect for as a reporter and an editor. But we're going to get a lot of stories that aren't going to be told. With all due respect to the two newspapers in town and to the TV stations and WGN Radio, you know, DNA really dug deep. I live in the Ravenswood, Lincoln Square neighborhood area. I don't know who's going to cover that now. You know, there's just not a lot of local news that's going to happen at the very granular level for those of us who need it.
And it was helping us all pay attention to, and we keep, and I want to say that, you know, when you say neighborhood news or local news, you automatically think, oh, they're going to tell me who won the high school football game or things like that. But it was much more than that. I think in my neighborhood, the West Loop, there were some issues that were being covered from zoning, crime, other things that are relatable to everybody.
Yeah, I relied on DNA reporting every single day. So my job involves really granular city hall reporting. But if there was a zoning issue that came up, that means that it had already gone through this super extensive neighborhood process that some neighborhood reporter at DNA Info had been covering forever. So they had zoning plans. They had what the alderman thought about it. They had what the people thought about it. Like, I rely on DNA every day, and I'm kind of freaking out about the impact it will have on my reporting going forward because it gave me so much good background.
Well, DNA's gotten a lot of love, especially from you guys here, but I'm a big Chicagoist guy. I love that site. I've always loved it since 2004 when it started. I love the people it wrote. I love the voice. And I still found myself on a daily basis going there to see what they curated. But we talked about it last night at Scott Smith on, and we talked about what this means for Chicago, the news ecosystem. Is this an opportunity for people to come in and fill a void? Is it the end of an era, meaning that these kind of sites, the DNA Infos, that are about ad revenue and the old way of making money, done?
Yeah, that's a great question because people just don't start media operations anymore. You know, there was a lot of kerfuffle around what's going to happen with the archive for DNA and the ISTs, the Chicagoist, DCist, New Yorkist, or Gothamist, I guess. You know, to come in and start fresh is a very daunting task, not just the money backing behind it, but, you know, there's some talent around town for sure. We've got people that can write and report in this city. But being able to figure out a business model that thus far the industry hasn't been able to come up with, or to find a potential backer, Joe Ricketts style, who is going to put some money into your operation and hope that they don't get bored or angry with it at some point. You know, it's a tough solution to find, I think. You know, the first thing that jumped to my mind are two things last night were, is Chance the Rapper got a couple million extra dollars sitting around because he seems to be willing to jump into
poor
those
Chance.
Areas.
It's like,
or, you
CPS.
Know,
any trouble in the city and they were like, where's Chance? He's Batman.
I think I have jokingly tweeted this at Edwin Eisendrath, the CEO over at the Sun-Times now, but it seems like a natural home. Some of that neighborhood, local level, local government reporting that they did at DNA, and to a lesser extent at Chicagoist, but that seems like something in their wheelhouse. You used to have the Chicago News Bureau that the Trib and the Sun-Times ran as a joint operation. It kind of filtered over the Sun-Times for a while. They've got their breaking news desk now, as does the Trib. But it seems like there's a fit there to be had.
Yeah.
But
well,
I don't know.
AD, I mean, the Daily Line's an interesting one. Your boss, Mike Fouché, wrote today about the idea that the service subscription model is the only way that's going to work, where people are going to have to pony up a monthly fee to be able to get the reporting they count on. And that's something that newspapers have tried. They tried paywalls and they've moved around, and it's getting more and more serious. I mean, you've seen that with the New York Times and Washington Post really kind of clamping down because they've kind of been porous and you can get around that stuff. But is that where I mean, is it time that we all have the frank conversation that you can't get news for free anymore?
I mean, I appreciate the job security of working somewhere where I know people are paying directly for the work that I produce and that they see value in it, and I am expected to produce value. I am hoping that everyone figures it out, basically. And I know not everyone can afford a subscription to us, but I think hopefully with some growth, maybe we can make it more affordable. Maybe we could do partnerships with publications like City Bureau, who has a membership model, or ProPublica, who has a foundation model. I think there will be an interesting mix, but I think a lot of the journalists that are leaving DNA are going to be hesitant to work at another billionaire-backed place.
I got to say, you know, I hearken back to a day when I was young and I would take 35 cents off the mantle and go, when I take the L, I'd pop it in the machine and I'd grab the Sun-Times, and maybe I'd get lucky that there was already one on the bus, but there was a time you paid. I mean, I paid 35 cents to have that paper and the news in my hand.
Yeah, you know, the whole information wants to be free on the internet model doesn't mean that you're getting something for nothing.
Right.
It means it's a free flow of information. You know, the idea that we can just get this like a soda or a cheeseburger and not have to pay for it is kind of stunningly short-sighted
weird.
A news consumer. And you know, you see people clamor when something like DNA dies or, you know, the Sun-Times is perpetually under the axe. But you know, people got to step up a little bit, you know, pay for news, pay for content. If you don't like what's being produced, make your voice heard, put your dollar down and, you know, jump into the game as an owner, essentially. But
there might be something in there as well to the key to unlocking the idea of what's news, what's fake news, what's free. You know, there's a lot in there that could change by just the way that we put a quarter or something on.
It's hard to value something that has no value.
Yeah.
You know, I pay for the Washington Post, I pay for the Trib, I pay for the New York Times, and I appreciate that content. I treat it as something semi-precious because I'm paying for it.
Value in, value out.
I for one, am looking forward to a smart person coming in and thinking outside the box about this whole issue about how to fund the news. Because in the last 10, 15 years, we've had a lot of smart people come in and try to just make the model work. And it continued to get to this point where the model doesn't work.
It will be interesting to see what impact ProPublica has.
Yes.
Thus far, they have not done a bunch, and they're concentrating more on longer form things. Are they going to have a daily model of some sort, even if it's curated? You know, I don't know that we've seen that yet. But they certainly have a financial model that can bear some success.
Yeah, but I do worry that the billionaire model can be similar to the foundation model, where foundation might do the same thing Ricketts did and say, well, this doesn't really fit our portfolio anymore, so we're dumping
YouTube. I mean, the news co-op was the same concept. I mean, that's what I mean. It just feels like a lot of great, smart organizations and people, they come in and they say, I can make it work. And they all end up in the same place. So that's what we have to figure out.
I wonder, too, are we learning from those failures?
Yeah,
you know, I don't know that that's necessarily the case.
Craig Newman, 80 Quig in studio tonight. We're reloading the news. We come back, we're going to get overreported, underreported. We're also going to look down the rabbit hole and find out what story is going to be remembered from this week. We will continue 312-981-7200. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago, WGNRadio.com. If you're an Amazon Echo user, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. Thanks, Rob. Download here, 720 WGN. Coming up at 9:30, David Kadesky, Naomi Ashley going to be here. Talk about their show, True Life Tales, which is David's autobiographical story of growing up in Niagara Falls. And he does a story at Davenport's where he recounts the childhood memories. And some of those memories are true.
Which side of Niagara?
I don't know. We'll find out. Yeah. Yeah, I think the American side. Right underneath it. He grew up in a barrel.
I was just going to say that.
Right. 80 Quig and Craig Newman in studio tonight. We are reloading this week's news. We are to the point where we're overreported and underreported. Why don't we start with overreported? Can I start on overreported?
Sure.
iPhone X. I am so sick and tired of the same story every time this company decides to put a product out.
Is it as big a deal as it used to be?
It's probably not as big of a deal, but I saw on every single newscast, news play, I was on the front page of the Tribune, people wait in line for phone. I mean, it's just, all right, we get it every time. And this phone is not that different. I mean, it's $1,000, which is crazy, but I don't know. Like, I feel like we just, again, we don't learn from our reporting mistakes, and then we're like, big story, people wait in line.
No other product gets reported on like Apple products.
And it's not the greatest product. I don't understand. Like, I get the concept. I'm an Apple user. I love it. But, you know, there's a lot of other wonders in technology that are happening in the world right now. And you're right. For some reason, they have figured out, and I don't know what it is, their marketing plan, their relationships, the store right behind us. But people stand in line for
Which is very cool, by the way.
Yeah, it's cool. Yeah. There are trees indoors.
I guess so.
Yeah, you know,
I liked what was there before, the river.
Like, I get it when the first phone came out. And one of my editing gigs at the Sun-Times used to be with Andy Inoko, who covered technology and always had the first couple iterations. But now it's just an update.
Yeah.
And right. $1,000 one at that.
There's no more home button. That's a big deal.
You smash it against your face, right?
That's how it works.
All right, AD, what do you have for overreported?
Well, as a reporter, I don't really think there is such a thing. But every year, I get really annoyed during budget season when rodent abatement comes up.
Yeah. Classic. That's a great. That's the other one.
Yeah.
It's the other editors iPhone and rats.
Yeah. Well, Chicago has, you know, our rat reputation. I think we're always in the top five in the world. But the mayor's office always rolls out all these different techniques to get rid of rats.
Right.
Dry ice, birth control.
Yeah.
Yeah, they make bait with rat birth control in it.
The behind my place, there's a courtyard, and what they like to do for there is they will have the fake plastic rock that fits into the, so it looks like it's just a rock.
It's a hide-a-key for a rat?
Yeah, it's a hide-a-key for, like, rat poison.
Yes.
Yeah.
So this year, the mayor allocated an extra $500,000 to rodent abatement, and they have, like, a special SEAL team for rats. And they're replacing a lot of people's trash cans to make them super strong and rat-proof.
My favorite rat story is, I remember, I'll make it real quick, I was on Halsted and I went to Alinea, the greatest restaurant in the world, right? And this was the big thing where you just spend so much money and you're like, this is it, I'm never going to eat like this again. And when you're done, they bring the car around, you're like, they're ready to go. And my wife is getting in the car and I'm getting ready to get in the car as I'm holding the door. And I look over about two doors down. And there's a rat that just, I'm like, oh, right, it's still Chicago. Like, it's still, like, you're still in building to building to building. I mean, the environment didn't change. I was like, well, there you go.
Yeah.
And they're Chicago rats. They don't really run away. They just look at you
exactly.
Like, you got a problem?
Hey, man.
They're trying to do like, hey, are you taking any of that Alinea food home?
Yeah.
What's up? Do you want to just hand that over? Yeah, rat abatement makes the list every year.
Overreported.
Let's go to underreported. Do you have, I mean, I think we kind of touched on this already with the sexual harassment stuff when we saw it kind of playing out in Springfield. But you say the underreported thing is literally that everything is underreported.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I think this probably could even go into our DNA info discussion that there just isn't enough journalism happening generally across the country and locally in Chicago. But, you know, Springfield's been an increasing decrease in coverage over the years. You know, we've got some really excellent reporters that work there. There's just not nearly enough of them. You know, a couple of years back, even, we'd have 3-4 dozen people that might be covering the State House from Springfield and a couple of people up here covering the local government. And it's just been this increasing drip, 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 dribble away from news organizations finding it to be important enough to staff on a regular basis. And
is it because the line item is bigger? Because you got to do housing, you have to live down. I mean, is that?
It's not that expensive.
It's so cheap to live in Springfield.
So what is why? Well, I mean, because I would think that you just saw with the budget crisis and everything that happened that people do have interest in what's happening.
They do, but you know, I don't think you see a steady inflow of clicks. It probably could map out to when you started to look at internet traffic and how things are important to people on a daily basis. Which is a good thing to keep an eye on as an editor, but also a bad thing to keep an eye on. You know, we talk about the need for an IG down there. You know, journalists are an IG. So from 2013 on, they haven't had an official one. But to your point earlier about can the legislature really appoint its own inspector? No. But that's why we have journalists. That's why we have reporters. That's why we have editors. But, you know, I think we start to see a lot more things slipping through the ethical gap and through the legal gap when you don't have a lot of watchdogs sitting there perched on the top of the State House.
Yeah, I think we could easily have 3 or 4 people down there for the Daily Line if we could afford to send that many people down there. I was down there a couple months ago for the big education reform vote. And they have like a guest desk there, and there was a box with a bunch of old pictures. And I pulled out a black and white picture from the 50s. And it was 45 people standing on the Capitol steps, and it was the press corps from the time. And now we're down to probably less than 10.
Handful, yeah.
Wow.
So this reload segment just turned into the internet sucks. And that's it. I mean, the internet has ruined everything.
And it should even be pointed out where that handful of reporters is from. You have one from St. Louis. You've got a couple people from Springfield. You've got a couple people from Chicago. But, you know, I've heard that there's a lot of the rest of the state beyond Chicago. They're not really getting their concerns covered whatsoever,
yeah.
except on an ad hoc basis. Right. The AP does a nice job, but they're, you know.
Yeah. Well, it makes me think. I mean, the concept we talk about, the overreported stories, whether it be rats or iPhones. And if you are a news organization and you've changed the way you look at your metrics, and your metrics is just about who clicks on what, Maybe there's something to be said that people click on iPhone stuff more than they click on state politics. And it's wrong. We're talking about it's wrong, but in the guise of what makes a business click and work.
I like, too, that we transitioned straight from rat abatement to covering politicians in Springfield. That was nicely done.
I've always wanted to do a rat tracker, right? You know how they did the celebrity tracker for Gawker? But we do rat tracker. Where'd you see where's the last rat you saw? I saw it heading west on Ashland.
Can we mount cameras on them while we're at it?
Yeah. Did you guys see the gif of Marianne Ahern noticing
yes!
a rat
Ooh.
Off camera? She's like,
now we can start an argument about how gif is pronounced, but that's
right,
for another
right.
show.
But, you know, I love Marianne Ahern's response there, because that is Chicago's response. That's everybody who's like, ugh. right off the bat. Reloading the news. We'll come back. We will get the rabbit hole story and which story will be remembered from this week. A.D. Quigg, Craig Newman in studio. Stay with us. All right, we're wrapping up the reload. 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. A.D. Quigg from the Daily Line, dailyline.net. Also her podcast, Aldercast, which you can find at WGN Plus. Also Craig Newman, former editors at both the Sun-Times and Cranes, and he is a freelance editor now, both reloading the news this week. 312-981-7200. All right, let's get to the rabbit hole story. AD, let's start with you. Your rabbit hole story is one that I think is all of our rabbit hole stories, which is sexual harassment.
Yeah, especially I think a lot of women are rethinking interactions they've had over the years. I have been in the rabbit hole since Bill Cosby stuff came out, and then R. Kelly, and then Weinstein, and then Silverstein, and I can't get out. I think about it all the time. It has made me rethink my interactions with almost everyone I deal with professionally and personally. I rabbit hole. I can't get out.
Yeah, I mean that's and you hear that a lot from women, you know, in any profession at this point, because you know they really pointed out that this is Hollywood, and they've talked about political as well, and they talked about media. But I think that's very short-sighted in the way that people, I mean, this sexual harassment was so pervasive in corporate culture. It has in
service culture.
Yeah. I mean, it's something that, I mean, like we said a little bit earlier in the segment, maybe because the light has been shown that possibly, you know, there it could be the beginning of some sort of culture change.
Yeah. I'm hoping more people speak out, more women figure out how to address it head on and stop it instead of kind of shaking it off or just getting out of the situation and calling it out directly, kind of scare more people and really communicate directly that what you're doing is inappropriate and wrong, and I deserve the respect. You deserve to show me respect, and I still haven't figured out a way to shoot down people that say inappropriate things to me, which happens all the time at the city and county building.
And to that point, I really hope it causes men to ask themselves about their actions and their thought process and their mannerisms and everything else.
Well, media, especially when you talk about the county building, I mean, God, I mean, how many times have we heard over and over about the Boys Club? I mean, it's you know, it's this idea that it was such a male-driven business in covering politics and covering Chicago. And, yeah, I mean, I would assume that it's just not to take a phrase from the president, but locker room talk gone amok, right?
Yeah. I mean, I'm encouraged to see. I look over in the press box when I'm at City Hall, and it's mostly women. I mean, it was Heather Sharone and Lauren Children, who's now at NHPR, but we have Becky Vivi at WBEZ, and Claudia, my colleague at The Daily Line, and Marianne Ahern. But
don't forget Fran Spielman.
Don't forget Fran. Fran is a legend, and she writes 5 stories a day, and she's terrifying. But that does not stop elected officials and staffers from saying things about the way I dress or what lipstick I'm wearing or what my hair looks like. And yeah, it doesn't stop.
To this day.
To this day. Even though the press box is packed and there are a lot of women in power, it still hasn't stopped.
Craig, what do you got for rabbit hole story.
I'm going to keep up with the rat theme and talk about fake news a little bit, but I want to avoid the idea of what is and isn't fake news and focus more on those social media companies that were sitting before Congress this week. You had Google, you had Facebook, and you had Twitter. Not the heads of those companies, but their lawyers that they sent into the slaughterhouse, and they got hit pretty hard by the congressional panel asking them how this happens and what are they thinking. But what came out of it is that they took a lot of money from obviously foreign entities who obviously had some sort of an agenda going on, and didn't really ask too many questions about why or where it was going, even when they started to see the trends within their own platforms. These companies continue to be willing to take the business advantage of being a media company without taking the ownership of being a media company. They don't want to admit to being anything more than a technology platform, and until that gets fixed, there's not going to be a lot that's
such an interesting story because, yeah, they are the – and you hear it more and more, and you hear it from the Michael Farrows and the former Rapports people at the Sun-Times – you know, Sagan,
the technology company that does content.
Yeah, technology company. They talk about the idea that that's the main competition for a newspaper is Facebook and Twitter. It's not another newspaper. That's sort of the day bygone era. But this idea that Facebook is a threat to news organizations, content producers, it's real. And the hard part about it is such a big business that they can choose how they want to be seen. And in this case, they're a technology platform. In a different case, they're creating their own material. I mean, and in another place, they're just an advertiser. You know, there's so many ways that they have really kind of cornered the market.
Yeah, but what was the number that came out this week? 129 million Americans were served up some sort of fake garbage news on Facebook alone during the election cycle last year, which is a mind-boggling statistic.
It is, and I feel like I was served up some of that stuff, and I knew it was fake. And I think that I, as much as I want them to be culpable for their material, there is something to be said about if you thought it was real, that just goes to media literacy to a certain point where you're like, yes, you're right. I mean, you want Facebook to clamp down on this stuff, but at the same time, where is the individual responsibility kind of come to play?
Well, I do my part by telling my mom that the thing she just shared on my wall is nonsense. But, you know, it is a broader outreach platform.
All right, my rabbit hole story is just about brainwaves. We can skip it. But it's a good study I didn't carry out today. It's really interesting about how there's a new study that's mapping the brain to understand that how does the brain get rid of unwanted thoughts. So if you're in a situation like, oh, I don't really want to think about that trauma or whatever it is, there's a chemical that we release that helps us change thoughts, you know, change your mind or to change it. And what they were looking at is people that do suffer from PTSD or do suffer from anxiety or psychological or psychiatric issues. That chemical is the focal point, meaning that it's not there for them, or it's not enough, or they're limited. And so I don't know why that is. That's what they haven't figured out. Why that chemical? Is it genetic? Is it environmental? What it is? But it's really interesting that this is an actual physiological makeup and not something that's just mental. And when we use the word mental like that, there is something happening that is keeping us from getting rid of those thoughts. In some case, I thought that was fascinating.
I agree.
Good. All right. Good.
As always, you're right.
I love it. Love it. All right. You guys ready? Which story is going to be remembered from this week? 5, 10, 15, 50, 500 years. They're going to look back at November 3rd and be like, that was the day. What do you guys think? What do you got for which story will be remembered? 80?
I have a few.
Oh.
The big old climate report that was released this week. Leaked a little bit early, and it is counter to most of the policies and prescriptions that the Trump administration has been talking about, but they did allow it to be released. It's same stuff we've been hearing for a very long time about the human impact on the climate.
Well, 80, extremely likely. That's the joke of that phrase. Yeah. It's extremely likely. Okay, is that more than what is that? What is extremely likely? That was my favorite phrase.
Super duper likely. Super duper.
Once it gets to super duper likely, I'll listen. But extremely likely, I need more proof.
Yeah, 13 federal agencies, humans are the dominant cause of global warming. We're in the hottest period in the history of civilization.
Yeah. That is a good one. We're going to remember that when it's
when we're all
too hot.
Go home tonight and read The Sixth Extinction by Elizabeth Colbert if you haven't already. Along those lines, fantastic book.
What's it
Craig,
about?
What do you got?
All of us killing ourselves through global climate change.
Ugh.
We are the asteroid.
Whoa. Ooh, mind blown.
I have the disappearing data of our federal government. 538 this week reported that the FBI released its annual crime statistics, and there were giant holes. As much as 70% of the usual data available was missing. We're looking at a big question about the U.S. Census Bureau and whether or not it's about to lose its leader. If he hasn't left already, I'm not sure. But where that agency is going and how they're going to administer data, which is obviously highly important to help federal, state, and local governments get funding, make decisions about policy, et cetera. You look at what's going on at the EPA and how data is being used or suppressed there. There's a lot of numbers that flow out of the U.S. government that are crucial to how we make day-to-day decisions, especially from a budgetary standpoint, that we're just not getting or we're starting to see slow to a trickle. And I think that's going to be a giant concern in the next few years.
My my story that will be remembered is the change of the tax code. I believe that what will happen is that in 500 years, we'll look back and be like, remember the week that we all just got so rich?
I do remember that week.
That's what I'm going to remember. They're going to be like, if we're going to revert back in our society to caves, and the cave drawings will show that 500 years ago when we simplified the tax code and changed and took tax cuts from corporations is when really took off.
It may be 5 years until we figure out what this tax law says.
Craig Newman, 80 Quig, it's a pleasure. It was great, you guys. Thanks for reloading this week's news here on 720 WGN.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.